We've reached chapter number 5 in our study. Give me your tired, your poor, and their assets. Provocatively entitled chapter. Now, if you, as we are commonly doing, we'll think about these the initial thoughts section. And remember, you can't modify your answer based on what you learned later. You have to, if you did the chapter beforehand, you have to say what you said before you did the rest, so that if they can point out how glaringly wrong you were, you can take ownership of that. So, the first question was, once you have determined, so going back to the previous chapter, we're talking about relief, rehabilitation, or development. Once you have determined whether relief, rehab, or development is the correct intervention for your context, what do you think you should do next? What are the next steps? Any ideas there? Anybody happen to have done that before they read the chapter?
Based on the title of the chapter.
Ah, cheating!
What their assets are.
Okay. Figure out what their assets are.
But I don't think that's a normal reaction.
It was not mine.
Yeah. Like we can't think about looking at. Because we're still in that rescue mode, no matter which category we label it under. Still, what do we have that we can... How can we rescue?
Yeah. What can I... Even if it's in rehab, it's still... What can we do to fix the situation?
Except for me.
But Vicky was right on point. We're glad for that. It's always good to have at least one all-star on your team. Build around. Yeah. And the other... I have to admit, I found... what did I write down? When I went back and looked at my answer, I thought... I had in my mind that my answer was actually worse than it was. And like, I went back and read it, and I thought, well, you know, I didn't focus as exclusively on... needs and so on, but I said something about determine what has already been done, you know, kind of, I guess, thinking what we could build on, but I know that my mind was still I was really thinking about, okay, whether it's relief, rehabilitation, or development, I've got to think of what the needs are here. I've got to find out, talk to the person. So I thought, hey, this is good, I'm being good, I should talk to the person, try to find out what's going on. I'm hoping to learn here to be a better... It'll be a good listener, but I was still focused on what needs are there that this person has, so I can figure out what we need to work on. Yeah.
Is this a good time to interject
a
comment?
Yes.
One of my first thoughts was, what do they what is it they don't need?
Okay.
Put it in the negative.
What is it they? But that's still, what is it that they don't need? Maybe you're thinking, okay, what are things that, were you thinking more along the lines of things that they have, kind of like we're headed toward assets, or were you thinking of just things that they might think they need that they really don't? Like things they might just be distracted by? What did you mean by it?
I haven't gotten that. that technical in my thinking. Specific in my thinking, but I was thinking of this story I heard some many years back about how some country in Africa, I don't remember which one, there was a really great industry going on of making t-shirts, and they were really good at that. And then there was this huge influx of gifted used t-shirts that came into that country from the United States, and the whole industry of t-shirt making collapsed because that country really didn't have t-shirts.
And they had a good thing going, and they were industrious. Yeah, I think some in this chapter and in previous ones there were examples of that where the relief given doesn't take a view toward or respect of what local businesses may already be there, and it can really negatively affect the local economy. People who are already assisting in that way, yeah. So they did not need donated t-shirts. Appreciate the thought behind that. I'm sure they came from North America, where all these North Americans felt, had good motives, perhaps, maybe. But That's not what was needed. As always, the standard disclaimer is, you know, as we think about through all these things, this book has been awfully challenging to me. It's not necessarily a comfortable thing, but it's a good thing. Our goal is not to become paralyzed. I think I keep having to say this, just even for my own sake. We do not want to become paralyzed by indecisiveness or fear, thinking, well, I'm just a head case, so anything I think about doing is probably wrong, and I'll probably end up hurting this person, and that I definitely don't want, so I just won't do anything. There's a real temptation, I think, to do that, especially as we talk through all these things. You might really start to think, boy, everything I thought the simplest thing was clearly the right thing to do. Now I see how, well, sure enough, when the author gives examples, that turns out to be harmful. So I'm just not sure I'll ever be able to really think through what I'm doing, and I'm sure I'll end up hurting people. I think that's a big risk with this book. So it's just important for us, I'm certainly not wanting to become paralyzed by that kind of thing. But as we go, we're becoming more and more maybe thoughtful about what we're doing. We're at least willing to think a few layers deeper, and we might recognize some better ways to go. And we will still make mistakes. Sure of that. Except for Vicky. She won't make mistakes. She gets to be our... We get to pick on her all day. Okay, well, the next question was... you can answer this if you'd like to out loud. I realize some people may not be comfortable doing that, but it's good for us to think about the gifts and abilities that God has given us and asked us to list some of our own gifts and abilities. So you're welcome to list some of yours, or if you want to talk about just gifts and abilities that in a generic anonymous sense, gifts and abilities that exist in the body, free to do that. If your slap shot is great, list that you've got an outstanding slap shot. It's 10 days till the season starts. What gifts and abilities might there be?
People who can... I always think that maybe the best way is to... Well, it depends on what you decided on, what they need, but help provide jobs or teach them jobs. So any kind of craft like they can teach or demonstrate, or create a workshop in which they teach a group of people various things.
So actual trade skills and the ability to teach those skills maybe to others?
Sure.
Be good?
That could be very broad. There's plenty of skills that are useful.
Yeah. Right.
The ability to relate and to interact with people so they can be able to get to know them, and the people that they find helpful and be comfortable with those people.
Okay. Yeah, some people really have a gift of, I would almost call it social skills, but gift of communication and relating to people in a way that makes people feel comfortable. That can be a big talent. Draw people out. Right. Yeah. Good communication is a big deal. And others. We have those with a gift of administration. You know, I think in the body there might be some who are good at organizing or kind of administering programs or getting people moving in the same direction. That's a big talent. Management is a talent we don't necessarily think of often. That could be useful. Okay, connected people. Those are handy. Yeah.
I think of hustling too. There's a lot of heavy lifting logistics of it.
Yeah.
You have a mass amount of people that could be in a similar line.
Yeah.
Transports.
Yeah, physical gifts. Yeah. Okay, a mentorship, kind of one-on-one teachers,
tutoring.
Yeah, lots of things. So there's just like we read about in the scriptures, right? There's a broad diversity of gifts, and this is a very good thing. Not to go on a side tangent thinking about all the diversity that we have, but I'm always just encouraged. This is something that keeps coming up in my own life again and again. I'm encouraged by the different gifts that we have, and yet I still find myself, maybe we all do this, you think about other people, you want everybody to be like you, and that sometimes it can be hard to appreciate that other people are different and have different gifts, and this is a very good thing. I'm not going to spend the whole class on sports analogies, but sometimes they just really work. You know, you don't want the whole team to be the same position, right? Whatever sport it may be, it's a good thing when you have different gifts and they work together. And the body, you know, being the example that is used, you don't want the whole body to be a knee, the whole body to be an ear. And it's really good when you have different talents. And so it's neat to see, even in context of what we're talking about in Mercy Ministry, it's good when we have everything from tutors to people who can lift and move things, people who can organize, people who can communicate, and so on. So here's a chapter for optimists, I thought. All the optimists can smile because this is all about positive thinking, but this is good. I read the first paragraph and was, like I said, my answer to the question previously, it wasn't that bad, I guess, but sure enough, the first paragraph kind of blew holes right off the bat in how I typically think about approaching whether we have relief, rehabilitation, or development in view. Immediately I'm coming to the situation thinking, okay, what things do we need to fix here? What solutions do we kind of need to bring? And the point of the chapter right off the bat was maybe that's not the best way to start. And what it actually does is communicate, even unintentionally, kind of a message that says, what's wrong with you? And how can I fix it? How can I fix you? You're not trying to communicate that. You're not trying to say, well, you've got all these things wrong with you. How can I fix you? But in effect, that's kind of the message that's coming across subtly. I tended to start with a needs assessment. You know, let's make a list of what needs are here. Even though now I'm hopefully a little bit more savvy in how I might approach it, not just from relief, but from rehabilitation and development. Even still, I'm thinking, well, what needs are there for the rehabilitation or development? And it's this kind of superiority that comes across, even if we're not trying to communicate that, that we're trying to avoid. So this chapter was all about starting with assets. What does the person already have that could be a strength or a resource? Instead of looking outside the person, this approach encourages the person to be a steward of the resources God has given him or her, and it helps us overcome what the book continues to call our poverty of being, this superiority complex that we might inadvertently, perhaps, have with all these solutions we're ready to bring, maybe well-intentioned. So the chapter encourages us not to start with the assumption that the solution to things here, this situation, lies in outside resources. Not just talking about relief, but even rehabilitation or development. Maybe we should shift our mind a little bit and not start with the assumption that the solution lies in outside resources. Maybe the solution lies with what's already here, what's already on the table, or at least largely. And maybe outside resources can come later if they're needed. Author gave a really good example I'll highlight a little bit later of doing that. So this approach, which sounded a little technical, don't want to get into too much dry technical work here, but they called it ABCD, asset-based community development. And this is, I guess, an approach that's used in a number of different organizations. Asset-based community development is doing this very thing, saying, well, let's start with what we have. Once all the assets have been identified with somebody, then we can talk about what needs there are to address. And when we consider bringing in outside resources, the two key questions that the chapter brought out were, again, if we're thinking, okay, we might need to bring in some outside help here, and we've already identified what we've got to work with, is it too much? Are we bringing in too much from the outside? And or is it too early? Timing is important. Have we really gone through the effort of identifying ways we can help ourselves, or other ways others in the community, it may not be just this person, but if this person's a part of a community, has family members, has, you know, others in the neighborhood, either in the housing project or in the just that particular community that this person's in, are there others in that community that still count as kind of being inside the circle? Have we really done the hard work of identifying other resources in that community before we start bringing in the outside stuff, and in which case we might be too early to bring in the outside help? One thing that was pointed out I thought was good was there's a difficult dynamic that sometimes it's hard to recognize people's motives for doing things, even our own. We think we have good intentions or that we have good motives. We might not be. The author mentioned a situation, so we'll have a couple of times here, where he was teaching this class in Africa. So he was over in a different country, kind of more of a what they call the majority world ministry, not in North America, but these classes that he was teaching, he started to realize that people were coming to. They seemed enthusiastic to come and learn things, but it became apparent after a while. I believe it was after he wasn't really giving any candy, that they were there for the candy. That is, they were hoping he happened to be a big, tall, white person. So here he is, big old tall guy, rich American, and it became clear after a while they were kind of hoping he was going to start providing some money, resources, and things. And when he wasn't doing that, he was just teaching them, they started to lose some interest in the class. And so people's motives there may have not quite been learning how to help themselves and to grow, but they were kind of there with a smile, looking enthusiastic, but really hoping that they were going to get essentially a handout. So we always have to keep that in mind as well. So for ABCD, the book here pointed out kind of four main elements of that. We can first identify and mobilize skills, capabilities, and resources of the individual or community. And it's good to see them as full of possibilities. Here's where I thought the optimists among us can smile. Think of all the great possibilities that exist here. And the pessimists among us can really take a lesson out of this. That there, we can look on the positive side, see people and their skills and the abilities and the things they do have, and actually approach the community or the situation thinking about what God might be doing here. That God might actually be at work here. There could be some good things we can hone in on. That was kind of a... I took that as kind of a... it was encouraging and also challenging. I'm thinking, how often do I do that? Would I really come into a situation where there's a lot of poverty, or some of the... I haven't been around the world a lot, but I've been in some situations in outside of the United States where there's just extreme poverty. Would I honestly come into that kind of situation where there's just all this that we've talked about in previous chapters, there's hopelessness, there's just extreme poverty, and say, boy, we got a lot to work with here. Look at what God is doing. No, I would not have done that. Okay, I would have come in and thought, whew, let's not get overwhelmed. Let's just let's take a deep breath here. Let's see where the needs are. Let's get started somewhere. And I would not, I don't know about you, but I would not have immediately jumped into God is working here already mode. That's hard to do. That's right. It is. But we should do that. We should be ready to say, okay, God is working here. He has been working here. I may not even be aware of half the things that might be going on. And we can start somewhere, even in pretty nasty situations. So, see them as full of possibilities given by God, and we can have that positive outlook to start with. And that's a challenge, I think, maybe more for some of us than others. As much as positive, it's kind of repetitive here, but just identifying these four main components of A, B, C, D. As much as possible, we look for resources to come from within. We seek to build and rebuild relationships among individuals and organizations. Could be that we're in a group where there's some broken relationships, organizations, people aren't talking to each other. There could be some areas where people are just kind of walking right by each other, not really connecting and seeing how they could work together. We know that happens. Cliques happen within one church congregation, right? You can have little groups that are not really communicating with one another. Well, certainly in any broader community, you can have that. Factions that are forming, and just businesses or organizations, relief organizations or individuals that aren't talking very well, so we could maybe seek to build upon relationships that are already there and encourage those connections to be made. And again, only bring in outside resources when the internal ones are insufficient to meet a pressing need, and be sure that we don't bring in too much or too early. I had a quote here. Our basic predisposition should be to see poor communities, including their natural resources, people, families, neighborhood associations, schools, businesses, governments, culture, etc., as being created by Jesus Christ and reflecting His goodness, and that they reflected His goodness. We should walk in with thoughts of Christ being at work and having been at work in this community since the creation of the world, or certainly the creation of this community. He was here before you were. Okay? And you may not readily see how He's at work. You may only see abject poverty and terrible situation, but you most likely aren't seeing all that's going on. And keep that in mind so that you can be ready to learn it. Is where I said, yeah, I don't know if I've ever thought that way going into that kind of circumstance. It also, the book pointed out here that this should give us a hearty respect for people and a desire to help. I don't know, I mean, have you often gone into a situation saying, I'm just looking to lord it over these people and show them how much better I am than they are? Probably not. I don't think anybody here is going to admit that anyway. But have you actually found yourself looking down on people? Maybe you realize later that you still think, you know, well, I mean, I've kind of got it together here. God has blessed me. I certainly have more resources than these people. All these kinds of thoughts. I kind of have an idea what's going on or what we need. These people don't. They're not helping themselves. They're being lazy. Some solutions are right here. They're not even realizing. All these kinds of things going on. You're being pretty disrespectful. Is what's going on. You don't really have a lot of respect for these people, because look at them and look how together you are, and they're not. Well, the more we're ready to think about gifts they do have and things that might be able to be used, the less we might be guilty of disrespecting other people and giving ourselves more credit than we should. We might really find ourselves respecting the talents that are there. And there are just some challenges that maybe need to be overcome to start unleashing those talents. So this could really help us develop an inherent respect for people who are in tough situations. That's come out in the book several times, I think, that situations, and we even mentioned one at the beginning here, where we're not intending to be disrespectful, but what ends up coming through is that that same sentiment that can just further shame and... It's been called a God complex earlier, all these things that we kind of come in with, even unintentionally. So again, the book is pretty challenging here to me, and I find myself going, oh, well, I guess I've done that before, or inadvertently I've probably come across that way. I know I'm just sitting here chattering, and I forgot to mention at the beginning of the class that today's sermon includes the wonderful verse from Ecclesiastes that God is in heaven and you are on the earth, therefore let your words be few. So I feel like I should sit up here and say, well, I don't have anything to say. I hope you enjoyed the reading. Let me pause for a second right there and see if there are any. It's like Logan said before, just jump in with comments or questions. I'm not intending to be just a talking head. Any thoughts that you have so far? Examples of maybe anybody want to be vulnerable and mention a situation where you've kind of drop the ball on this. Feel free.
Some of the struggle is it's so easy for us to say, if they hadn't done this, and this, they would be in that situation. And so what I need to do is teach them how to prepare for the next time so this doesn't happen. I need to teach them this. But quite often people have been in the relief mode of their life, and all they want is relief. They don't.
Right.
You know, if they want an immediate answer to their problem, they don't want you to tell them, here, let me sit down with you and see what you can do so this problem won't keep occurring. You know,
right.
It's hard to get them from, I want this right now.
Yeah, I just want this thing paid, or I want, yeah.
To, yes, I'll sit down with you and we'll think this through.
Yeah.
Because they just live on a, hour by hour, day by day, they can't look in the future. And they don't. And I think part of that is our whole system keeps them from being able to do that. They just want it now. And they can get pretty angry if you don't give it to them.
Right. I just want that thing.
And that's it, that you've lost that relationship because they're not going to listen to you. Try to teach them how to prevent that from happening or what they can do themselves. You know, I think in this need, going to the community, finding what their assets are, I think that fits really well in community development. You know, you're going to start a program. Yes, who in the community can help in that program? Who has the gift for tutoring or desire to do that? But when it's individuals, it's really hard not to lose that relationship if you haven't met that relief.
Right.
And then once the relief is taken care of, they're not interested, you know. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
And then boom, something happens again. They don't want to get to that. They want the relief. You know, it's a cycle. At least that's my experience. But it's also really easy for us to go, I know, you know, we shouldn't give them this because we're just enabling. We need to be able to help them, but if they're not ready to hear that and you don't give them something, you might lose.
It is. That's a key thing. A long process is going to come up later here. This is the kind of thing that doesn't get solved in 22 minutes plus 8 minutes of commercials, 30-minute sitcom or something. In our microwave society, he mentions this later in the book, especially in North America, in our need for speed. I'm going to mention that. That was coming later. The North America. What was the quote here? North Americans, especially North Americans, need for speed undermines the slow process needed for lasting and effective long-run development. And so it could be both we and our desire to help quickly, just knock it out, let's just solve this problem, and people who are seeking help may want I just have this bill. I just need, I don't know where it's going to come from, and I can't pay my rent this month. I can't pay the electric bill. I just need that taken care of, and then everything will be okay. When you know that actually, I mean, that might be a pressing need. The rent is due. Yeah, the electric bill is due, but it's going to be due next month too. And the same situation has been had, for years. And, you never know how receptive a person might be. Yeah. The book mentioned, of course, that the fall in Adam has distorted and corrupted assets. So it is true that there is a lack of assets often. Those assets may be corrupted. People's abilities or thinking is clouded and so on. That's definitely true. We're not saying that everything is wonderful and perfect and we just simply have to recognize it and it'll all be okay. There are problems. There is lack. That is true. But I'll read, I had noted here, they noted Colossians 1:16. It's Christ holding all things together here. For by Him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through Him and for Him, and He is before all things, and in Him all things consist. Their point kind of was that Christ is holding all things together here. He's created everything from the assets that are involved and all the way through the situation that's involved. So we remember that Christ is God is sovereign here, and Christ is in control. That can be an encouragement, especially in pretty nasty situations. So if you read the book earlier I think it was chapter 1, one of the authors here, who I guess is a 6'10" guy, big old tall guy, and he was referred to as a Mzungu? I don't know how you pronounce this. Mzungu, which is a word in Africa, I think, that kind of refers to basically a rich white person, is my understanding. He was in this very, very poor slum in Africa, terrible poverty, terrible sickness. The conditions there were just turn your stomach types of things, everything from the stench to the just the conditions, what people are living in. Terrible situation, the kind of thing you generally won't even find in this country, no matter how hard you look, even it's bad. Well, he earlier had given this example of Grace, a lady whose name had been changed to Grace. She was an ex-witch doctor who had converted and was trying to come out of that lifestyle. She had been a very pagan lifestyle. And she was... they found her one day. She didn't come to the church, to the meeting, and to this class they'd been having. They're trying to figure out what's happened to her. Where is she? They find her, and she's at her house, or her dwelling. I think she was writhing on the ground in pain. I don't remember, maybe somebody does, what the exact malady was that she had, where she was hurting. I believe she was HIV positive as well. And this could be related, but she had some sort of pain going on that was almost unbearable. And it became clear that they could cure this. This was one that was actually treatable with penicillin. And this is often the case, you know, that penicillin has really brought a lot of relief in our world. And she just needed some penicillin that would actually cure her here. And the penicillin would cost $8. So this is a doable thing. We can do this. And in that story, the author provided the $8. And they got the penicillin, and she was healed. What could be better than this? It's a pressing need. I don't know that she was close to death, but she was in an awful lot of pain, wasn't able to function or come to the meeting. She was in a nasty situation. And the problem was solved. Whoop! All right. At least we're making progress here, right? Well, here in this chapter, the author points out he may have done more harm than good. And here's a situation where, if you're like me, you might say, oh my goodness, how, you know, I thought this was a simple situation. Relief is obviously needed. Isn't this the Good Samaritan? She's on the side of the road. At least we provide some relief, and then we'll help her grow in Christ afterward. Right? My reaction might be, well, if I can't even solve this situation, I'm not sure I can solve any situations and recognize what's needed. But again, let's be encouraged that as we think through examples of how this might have been done differently, the next time, maybe we'll do the same thing, or maybe we'll approach it a little bit different way. At least we'll just have a little bit broader knowledge. So he kind of took us through here how it might have been better to approach the situation a little bit differently. So he intervened. He gave the $8. They got the penicillin, and it worked. Well, according to our author, relief was definitely the correct intervention here. She didn't, at this point yet, need rehabilitation or development. She needed some penicillin, and preferably soon. That would be a good thing. So it's not that relief wasn't the correct intervention. It's just that he was not necessarily the best person to give the relief. He jumped in and did it. But by working a little bit harder, it could have been that a different angle of providing that relief might have been more effective, especially for the long term. And here's one way that might have gone. First of all, he said, well, perhaps he should have walked back to the church. Just to set the context, remember, they're having these classes. There are about 100 people, I think, coming to these classes on small business. They're trying to do some development work. There were a lot of people that had been coming, members of the church and others in this slum community. He could have walked back to that church and said, hey, we did find her. We know where Grace is and why she's not here. She's in a pretty nasty situation. She's in a lot of pain. She needs $8 worth of penicillin. They were all very poor. But according to him, that's pretty likely that they could have each come up with 8 cents. You know, obviously, maybe a few people couldn't have. A couple people might have been able to come up with 16 cents. On average, they probably, the group, could have come up with $8 themselves, even in their poverty, to help a member of their community who is in dire need. He wants to highlight a key principle here from chapter 4, which we looked at last week. Respond when the needs of the affected population are unmet by local people or organizations or family members due to their inability or unwillingness to help. Now, if they cannot help, they've tried and they cannot come up with $8, or they are absolutely unwilling at this particular moment, they just seem hard-hearted and don't care about Grace. You can address that later. Or maybe they could come up with $4 or something. But try and see. It could be that they would jump into action really would like to help Grace, maybe they do care about her, and could come up with $8. Let's at least try that first before jumping in with our $8 that we can do. In circumventing this, he says he violated all four principles of A, B, C, D. And here's where he mentioned that North Americans' need for speed undermines the slow process needed for lasting and effective long-run development. So Grace, in his example, was going to need a lot more. This will get her by the physically painful situation she was in. But for the long haul, he's going to be gone. And he mentioned this. He's going to get in a cab, he's going to go to the airport, and he's back to North America in this particular situation. Or if he was in you know, even in this area of the country, he probably doesn't live in that particular community. He's going to be out, and they're still going to be living there the next week. She's still going to need others in her community, and she could have developed a tighter bond with some of them if he had worked with them to try to provide this together instead of swooping in, doing it, and then he's gone, and nobody's really connected. He mentioned how he's probably undermined the pastor in that situation. Again, all of this unintentionally. He didn't mean to do any of this. He was just trying to help. But the pastor now, I thought, wow, I hadn't even thought of that. The pastor probably found out about Grace's situation. He found out she was in this terrible situation, and she's already been healed before he even knew about it. And so he hasn't had an opportunity to help the situation, gain some credibility, bring the community together. He's already found out that the other guy swooped in and solved the situation before he even knew what was going on. So now when he's trying to preach his sermon later or help these people, who knows how his credibility may have been damaged because he wasn't even there in this situation. Now, I'm sure he appreciates having somebody else come and do some of the help. There was a lady in this situation. I forgot her name. I think it was started with Elizabeth. I was going to say it started with a K. I was way off. Elizabeth, who had been... She was a local person. She didn't live in the slum, but she was in that area, had been working kind of more long-term, was his connection to come in and help. So she's kind of an intermediate person. She could have been more involved, since she is going to be there longer-term, coming in and out, than he is. He didn't really involve her that much. So here's a situation that seems so simple, where we're seeing how A, B, C, D, and the willingness to do the harder work of trying to engage the community to help this need would have been better for the long term than just... Even when relief was necessary. This was a relief situation, not a rehab or development. But if he had worked a little harder to do that, he might have not undermined some things he didn't intend to undermine. So, again, good not to be paralyzed by fear. I still find myself thinking, well, you know, but in a given situation, I might... If I don't recognize all the nuances that could go on there, will I just be a head case? What should I do? What should I do? Find the email address of the author here. I don't know. Email him. Call him real quick. Okay, I'm in this situation. I don't want to hurt everybody. Should I help this way or should I help that way? I think it's really just more of a broadening of our understanding. He said that he inadvertently perpetuated the decades of North American evangelical communication that the powerful, rich, educated white people are the salt and light of the earth, and they're really the ones where the relief's going to come from. And instead, he could have helped the local body be salt and light to Grace, this new convert. The local body could have been shown to be the ones who cared, ones who would pull together, ones who would love her. He could have helped facilitate that in her eyes, and she could have seen how the local body is ready to be Christ's hands and feet to her. And instead, inadvertently, he kind of showed how these outsiders that swoop in with all their resources are really the problem solvers.
So he wishes he left her living the pain for longer while he sorted these problems.
Essentially, yeah. And that was a tough one, too. You think it's hard, somebody's in pain. He didn't really give an example. I don't know if he said how long he would do it. I mean, the person's in pain. We all want that to be solved. You know, I don't know that he would have gone. I think they were actually having the meeting at the time, so maybe it was a couple of hours. Let's go back. Let's kind of stop the meeting and say, hey, everybody, we've got a pressing need right now. Can we pull together here? You know, rather than, hey, give us a week. We're going to go. We're going to send out some email. We'll put some flyers out in the community. We'll call a meeting for Friday. It's Monday right now. And, you know, I don't think he's in saying, why don't you just gut it out for the week and we'll figure it out, you know, in this particular situation. But he certainly, I think, could have a couple of hours worth of work might have been able to dramatically help the situation. We may find ourselves in one where a couple of days, you know, somebody's not in. We talked last week, I think, was about if, you know, we need to stop the bleeding. If somebody's like the Good Samaritan. You know, there could be situations where the person is in imminent danger of serious physical complications or something. If the person's bleeding to death, stop the bleeding. I will be back, and the person comes back. You know, they bled to death by the time you get back.
I read the whole book. Is the gist mostly about helping in third world countries, or is this talking about needs in countries?
It's a little bit of both, from what I've been able to gather. He gives a lot of examples of third world relief, but then he's usually pretty quick, or they, I guess it's multiple authors. They are pretty quick to say, now here's the situation over there, but lest we think, well, yeah, I mean, over there, that's one thing. That doesn't happen here. They're usually pretty quick to say, here's how that same thing could apply in a situation in North America. We adjust it a little bit, and there are ways. He had one. We'll wrap up here in a few minutes, but he had one that he kind of related back to the North American context. For example, the housing project and the Christmas gifts and so on. He's quick to kind of say how this sort of thing could apply in both. Sometimes the particulars and the mindsets might be slightly different. We need to be aware of that. But there's often the same general need. And so again, we don't want to misapply this, and we have somebody like the literal Good Samaritan, somebody's laying in the gutter bleeding to death, and you say, well, I see that your carotid artery is severed and you probably have about 4 minutes. I will be back as I see if the community has, there may be somebody in the community who's a doctor or has medical training, could come, put some pressure on that to try to stop. Obviously, if there's a very acute situation, there might be times where we've got to get that started, but we might sometimes be a little quicker on the trigger than we need to be. Again, helping a little bit too early or too much with outside resources when getting more people involved could actually have a longer term benefit. And that's harder work. It's harder to work with people, engage the community, do all this. Sure is a lot easier to just provide some relief right then. You might feel good about yourself after that, right? You know, congratulations, I did this, I was helping, and it makes you feel good. Well, yes, but it's harder to do the other. Seeing our time, I'll just kind of quickly brief. There were three common approaches to ABCD that he listed. I don't know that, I mean, you can read about these. I don't know that we need to highlight a lot of details about them. The first one was called asset mapping, which was also called asset inventorying, and it just had to do with taking account of what people have and trying to kind of build a list of what resources we've got here. He gave an interesting example in the housing project. Sunday school class was assigned to go out into the housing project where they are sticking out like a sore thumb and go door to door, cold calling on people, knocking on their door and saying, hi, I'm from Community Presbyterian Church, which the author was just said he just couldn't stand the way this sounded and everything. Hi, I'm from Stillwater Reformed Presbyterian Church. We're doing a survey to find out what talents you have. He's just, you know, said he wished he had gone to the other class, which was examining the finer points of Presbyterianism, instead of going to this class. So here he was. He knocked on the first door. This lady answers. He's 6'10". She's looking at his belly button, and he's saying, "Hi, I'm from Community Presbyterian Church." And she said, "Huh? What? You're doing what?" And you know, he's just kind of going, I'm just trying to find out what talents you have." And the situation starts out fairly rocky. Next thing you know, somebody deeper in the apartment says, "I can cook, I guess." And then somebody back in the apartment says, "She can make what was the food?
Chitlins.
Yeah. What are those?
Chicken gizzards
or something. She can make these like nobody else's business. She is world class. She's like Miss K from Duck Dynasty." And so they all start talking up from the back of the apartment. They're kind of shouting this out. And she kind of, I think, blushed a little bit and said, "Well, I guess I can cook pretty good." Next thing you know, the author, who didn't want to even be doing this, finds himself sitting in their living room, which this is no small thing. They're in the South here. Okay. He's sitting in the living room with a group of people, and they're all bragging on each other, saying, "Well, you know, Jim, he can fix your car. I mean, you got a problem with your car, he can fix that." You know, and they're all going back and forth talking about all these different talents that they have. He's just writing all this down. Next thing you knew, he got them talking, and they're just full of all kinds of ideas about things they can do and talents that they have. So This was an example of going out there trying to just build some knowledge in the community of what assets they've got, things they can do. And you got them talking just a little bit, and they were happy to think about all the things they could do. And maybe nobody had done this with them. They hadn't really identified these things before. It was really encouraging to everybody. The next one was PLA, Participatory Learning and Action. And this was started primarily in third world type countries, centers upon group-based exercises to get folks thinking about their situation and how they can take ownership of it. And he said this can be adapted to the North American context, especially with community-based decision makers. There are some cultures, I don't think of it quite as much in culture that many of us live in, but there are a lot of cultures where there's a lot more community decision making. We tend to be kind of family oriented, or we kind of go it on our own most of the time. I think a lot of us anyway sitting here, I'm not saying that's bad necessarily, but there are a lot of communities where they get together in a more broad sense and kind of make a group decision, and they just tend to be more kind of together. We tend to be a little bit more kind of drawn back. And so getting them, he mentioned several immigrants, Native Americans, African Americans, Hispanics, and some of these cultures tend to be more community-driven like that. And so that can be adapted for a North American context, especially with those groups, to get them together. And the other one was appreciative inquiry. I feel like, you know, we ought to work on our masters here or something in identifying these different things that are used. AI, which for those of you who come with a computer science background means artificial intelligence, is not what we're talking about here. It's kind of like the other two. It's focusing on what's right and good, and it did have a little bit of a postmodernist background to it, which we Christians might, it had to do with positive thinking, and we might be quick to say, okay, and it's not just about constructing our own reality here. But he said it was good when it would help people identify where their community has come from, kind of their history, recognize strengths that are there, and it can be good to not distract, but when people are coming with just a laundry list of needs, I got all these things, like even Meg was talking about, I got all these things that I need. If we're able to redirect the conversation a little bit toward strengths, sometimes they kind of forget where the conversation started, which was all about my laundry list of needs, and pretty soon it's kind of taken a more positive bent toward things that I can do. Now, I might still have some needs. The bill is still due. Still got to get the rent paid. But this method had some of those more positive aspects to get the conversation thinking a little bit more about what's already there. The last thing I think to think about, and then I'll maybe read one extended quote and we'll wrap up. It's funny, every time I start and I think, well, you know, we'd probably be done in 20 minutes because I don't think, you know, there's too much to talk about here. We end up filling up. We have to remember that in a situation when we're dealing with a lot of poverty, despair and shame are very much at play. So we might go in thinking about all the just solutions, and you have to understand people have emotional concerns as well. There's despair, and there are emotions in play that can help, that can contribute to people's inactivity and so on, because they're depressed. Okay? They're depressed. They're ashamed. They're tired. They don't know. You know, they've tried things. They're discouraged. And we have to keep that in mind. I was going to, let me see if I have time to read this or not. Where was my mark here? Okay, Kindle software was updated, and I'm trying to remember how to work it here. Hang on. Okay. Let's see.
Can I shoot out a second?
Please.
You know, when they were doing those surveys in the community and they found out the lady could cook, the other guy could fix bikes, that is happening in their community. You know, when somebody in their community needs a bike fixed, they go and they help each other.
Yeah.
I think what would lift them to the next level, you know, our respect, but like, okay, now I know someone that can fix bikes for you, but when you go to them and need their expertise, or say, hey, somebody that lives over there, and they're excellent at fixing cars, and they're all connected in ways we don't understand in their community and are helping each other. You know, they want respect. They want a voice that we hear. What they want to do. I
love you, Daddy.
Make use of that instead of saying, oh, you guys need to organize, you guys are going to be better off.
Yeah.
They want to be respected in a bunch of their lives. And generally speaking.
Yeah.
So giving them the kind of opportunity for improvement by us seeking their assets, not just saying, okay, help each other.
Right.
They're already doing that.
Yeah. That's good.
So are you saying that this similar situation exists? Instead of going to Pimpers to get your bypassed, you go to this guy who lives in
there. You're building a relationship, and then you're finding out more and more what he does well. He may find out that white person's not so scary, and we all go to their church.
Yeah.
I would think it also kind of gives them a validation as a person themselves.
Yeah. Right.
Something of value.
Yeah.
We tend to see them when they don't have.
Right. That is a good idea. So you might find a situation where, yeah, and maybe you could even pay for some of that work. It gets an opportunity to increase the material need or relief by, here, I'll pay you to fix mine.
Like, something.
Yeah.
Find out what is acceptable in their community.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. No, sorry. I didn't want to look like I was showing favoritism.
In a situation, our church was doing renovation and adding on. Unfortunately, it was about the same time that our pastor was leaving. Not really one to think through the situation as clearly. We hired a contractor that he had known and the church who had some workers that were in his own ministry. People come out of prison, giving them jobs. But it would have been so much better to have gone and done a survey to find out who in our community could paint and drywall. And
yeah.
Instead of, yeah, he had his focus. This is my ministry. My men are going to come work on this building. But you know, what kind of damage did we do as a church?
Yeah.
To not get the people in the community to come.
Right. Right.
It's kind of interesting. I've seen this in action. Kind of when I went on a mission trip to Honduras to feed the children. Their whole aspect of their ministry was to build the relationships in the community, find out who would be there, and long term, locally, help everybody. And so, the people in, they were working in an orphanage mainly in this really poverty stricken area of the capital. They spent lots of time finding people local that would be the helpers, the teachers, the people to clean, not rather than just bringing in my own people. It's just let's find people that we can lift up to those positions and stuff. And when they built a feeding station there once where they'd hand out food a couple of times a week or something like that, they had people in the community actually coming and helping build it.
Yeah.
So they had a part of the project. And they had a local church that was just around the corner that they had built up friendships with. And this church, they would come alongside and help with, the orphans bringing up their spiritually. And so it was all very important for them. And they stressed it with us before we went down that, anytime you can, find someone there. If you're needing to do something, find someone there who can come along and see if you can have them do it for you.
Yeah.
And do the helping.
Much more sustainable. Yeah, they're building a much more sustainable long-term thing there.
Don't hand out money. Don't hand out candy. They were very specific. Don't do these kind of things because it's not going to help.
Yeah.
You're just giving them handouts and they're going to just learn to expect it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Well, I won't read it now. I'll close in prayer, but there's a good example right at the end of the chapter about a church that was having kind of I think it was a was it here? Food, I think. Ministry, and when they really started getting people involved, it was a neat example of how using these methods, in this case it was the AI, turned the thing on its kind of on its head. People weren't really participating or getting anything out of it. Next thing they knew, it was transformed and people were really getting engaged. It was a good example of how this can work. I thought, okay, I understand it. Sometimes it's all theory, but seeing how it worked in practice was a good way to do so. I recommend that for your reading. I'll pray for us and let's close. Lord, how thankful we are for your grace to us. We thank you that you have been merciful. You have blessed us with all kinds of different talents and gifts and resources. We thank you for those. We recognize they come from your hand and no other. We confess that we have been quick to judge others or inadvertently, Lord, even when we've not tried to, we have perhaps harmed others or failed to help in good ways. Lord, we don't want to be paralyzed by fear of that. We pray that you would help us to understand the best ways to help. And as we started at the very beginning of this study, we pray that you would impress upon us the need to help, and how important it is that we be active in assisting the poor and the needy, the orphan and the widow. We ask that you would bless our worship today. In Christ's name, amen.